Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Well, greetings, everyone, from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the January 22nd, 2011 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida, committed to expanding Florida's aerospace enterprise. Well, there sure is a lot to talk about, as usual, a lot to get to today. And as always, you're welcome to join in the conversation at any point. Give us a call, 321-768-1240. Gets you right into the studio. Star 1240 is a good number for AT&T wireless customers here along Florida's Space Coast. If you're listening online or too shy to call in, you can always send us some email. Send it to spacetalking@AOL.com. All email right goes right there. We take a look at it and get it right into the queue. And you can join in the conversation anytime you want. Got a lot to talk about again today. As we said, congratulations, though, the big news, I think anyway, the big news of the week. Congratulations going out today to United Launch Alliance, the U.S. Air Force, the National Reconnaissance Office, and the whole team. Responsible for the allegedly, reportedly successful launch of a Delta IV heavy rocket, I guess it would have been Thursday, from Space Launch Complex 6 out at Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. A lot of people here were talking about it, but it didn't happen here. You didn't miss anything. But those on the West Coast got quite a treat as the nation's biggest rocket ever launched from California lifted off. Again, it's a success as far as we know. We saw it clear the tower. We saw it head out south the way it was supposed to. But since it was a National Reconnaissance Office mission and NRO mission, once the upper stage separator, at least once the nose cone came off, it was all a classified secret at that point. So we don't have any reports that it went bad, and everyone seems to be pretty happy. So again, just a great, great success as far as we know. Still watching the thing. I don't know if you saw the video, but these Delta IV Heavies still to this day scare me to death when they ignite their main engines. You know, there's this initial flurry of flame. And it's designed to do this, by the way. But there's this flame that comes right up the rocket and it immediately singes all the orange foam on the outside of the common booster core and it turns it a charred black. And it was especially evident with this Delta IV Heavy out of Vandenberg. And, you know, you just look like this rocket's just charring, you know, and then it lifts off and everything's fine. But what an incredible, incredible rocket. And, again, a great success, the biggest rocket ever launched from California. Well, you know, and as we look at our space program in the big picture, too, some other things happening this week. You know, we look at the direction of where we're headed. We hear these claims all the time that our human spaceflight program is going away. And, of course, it just drives me crazy. Every time I read that someone claims that, I just want to yell out, you know, and react to such nonsense. And I'll give you a great example. Just the last 48 hours in space on board the International Space Station early this morning, while I hope most of you slept or maybe were just getting in after a fun Friday night, 12:37 a.m. this morning, our time, an H-2B rocket lifted off from Japan, carrying another one of the Japanese cargo transfer vehicles on its way to the International Space Station. All of the international partners are contributing with these kind of these unmanned cargo carriers. Our shuttle program brings up the multipurpose modules, the logistics modules. The Russians, of course, experienced in launching their Progress vehicles. European Space Agency now has their transfer vehicle as well. Well, in any case, the Japanese launched their second one into orbit this morning. It is on its way to rendezvous with the space station on Thursday. the crew on board the space station will use their station robot arm and grapple the transfer vehicle and hook it up to the Harmony module and start unloading all the fun up there. At the same time, yesterday, on board the International Space Station, two Russian cosmonauts went outside for about 5.5 hours and did a variety of little things, miscellaneous things, kind of errands that you need to do every once in a while, retrieve some experiments, put some new ones out. I think a new camera got put in place, some other hardware fixed all to the Russian segments of the space station. And so they were out there for a while. And, of course, on board right now are six crew members aboard the International Space Station, including Scott Kelly, brother, of course, of Mark Kelly, and who continues to be in the news as we watch Representative Giffords recover. She went to Houston yesterday with husband Mark along for the ride. And in fact, next week we mentioned the progress. The progress is going up right away next week. So then with Discovery going off hopefully in late February. So there's tremendous amount of activity, lots of traffic, space traffic going to and from the space station. I mean, it really is an active space site, and we have a variety of spaceports here on the ground that are supporting it. And so, again, as we watch our shuttle program wind down, there seems to be still a lot of activity going on up in space. So, you know, don't let anyone convince you that there's not an active space program going on. Of course, we would like it to be more active. And it seems to be our lot in life to always be asking for more money to make more things happen in space. You know, what we're going through now with our budget and policy deliberations is nothing new. Even before Apollo 11 landed in 1969, the first landing on the moon, NASA's budget had peaked in terms of its share of the overall national budget, and it was on its way down. You know, so from the very beginning, our space program has always required visionaries who not only could imagine the solutions to problems, but then, of course, turn those ideas, those dreams into reality. And there's a man named Croft Erica who was such a man. And if you've never heard of Dr. Erica, he was part of the German rocket team. A colleague of Wernher von Braun, part of the group that came over from Peenemünde to work here in the United States. And he, like the others, had a vision for human spaceflight. He had an engineering know-how to back it all up and went and made his contributions to the space program. And he's going to be we're going to continue to talk about him for the rest of the program. I'm basically trying to get you get an introduction out of the way so that we can spend some more time talking about him after the first break. Dr. Erica considered the father of the Centaur upper stage. A lot of us here around the Cape know about the historic Centaur and how it was wedded to the top of the Titan rocket and the Atlas rocket. Atlas Centaur is a common thing around here. The Centaur continues to fly today as a upper stage on our deltas and atlases, and he was the one that basically put all that together. He was among the German pioneers who said that you know, we should be using liquid hydrogen as a fuel. A lot of the guys at the time wanted to use kerosene, the RP-1, rocket propellant one, a refined kerosene. Well, you know, there were some needs for a more efficient, higher energy rocket engine. And that could use liquid hydrogen as the fuel when combined with liquid oxygen. And he put all that together, came up with the Centaur upper stage, and made possible all of our early shots to the moon, the planetary probes, and then, of course, led to the technology that was incorporated into the Saturn V. So big part of our space program, but we don't know much about him. Well, Marcia Freeman, a longtime writer, editor, author, space advocate, has written a book about him called Craft Erica's Extraterrestrial Imperative. And when we return from the break we're about to take, we're going to be joined by Marcia by a telephone from her home in Virginia and spend some time talking about this mostly unsung hero of our space program. And I hope you'll join in the conversation as well. So stand by for that. We'll be back with Marcia in just a moment. This is Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB.
If it's happening in space, Jim Banky is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And indeed, welcome back to Space Talk right here on WMMB, brought to you by Space Florida. 321-768-1240 is the number to call to get into the studio here and be a part of today's conversation. Star 1240 for your AT&T wireless customers. And anyone, anywhere online in the world can certainly send us an email right now to spacetalking@AOL.com and participate in this conversation, which now turns to some more details about a German rocket pioneer named Kraft Ehrke. Absolutely interesting man, very much cut in the mold of some of the great space pioneers of the early days. And the more I read this book by Marcia Freeman, the more fascinated I am by the guy. This quote here real quick, just think about this. This is from June 1968, but think of how you could say this today. It's absolutely true. He's talking about defending the space program. He says, "The critics of our national space effort have repeatedly questioned, among other things, the reality of any returns beyond scientific ones from interplanetary flight. The very shallowness of this logic does considerable damage to this nation." The shallowness of this logic. I would love to get up in front of Congress someday and say, you know, until you fund this thing, until you make up your minds and give us the money to go do what we need to do, the shallowness of your logic that's preventing that from happening. Man, that's good stuff. And making that available to me in this new book, Kraft Ehrke's Extraterrestrial Imperative, is the author, Marcia Freeman. And Marcia joins us again from her home in Virginia. Marcia, welcome to Space Talk.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. Well, Marcia, let's talk just for a brief moment about you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to write this book.
Well, I have been interested in the space program, I guess, my whole life, but have been writing about it since the late 1970s. I really am interested in every aspect, and being here in the Washington area, even have the experience, shall we say, of having to sit through congressional hearings and participate in some of the national debate you mentioned on space policy and the budget.
Yeah.
In the mid-1980s, I really had the good fortune of meeting Kraft Ehrke and some of the other German space pioneers who were still around at that time, and really was very intrigued by their long view. I had known people in the space program before, but many people even working in the manned program or the planetary program had kind of a short-term view, not to mention the Congress.
Right.
But people like Kraft Ehrke and von Braun, by the 1940s, were already writing about manned missions to Mars. They always had a longer vision, and they could evaluate what was going on now with that view in mind, you know, that everything didn't have to be immediate,
mm-hmm.
that you could really look towards the future. And that, I think, was very attractive to my way of thinking.
Well, and so you write about this man, and why Dr. Ehrke? What was it about him that fascinates you? And maybe give us the quick game show bio of who this gentleman was.
Well, like many of the Germans who came here with von Braun after the war, he was a young man, a teenager in Germany during the 1920s, and had the advantage of reading people's work, such as Hermann Oberth, kind of the German father of space flight,
mm-hmm.
going to the movies in the late 1920s and seeing a film called The Woman in the Moon, and just became very excited about the possibilities of going into space. Like many of them, he was in college, and his studies were interrupted by World War II. He was drafted.
Mm-hmm.
But the German army recognized that there were many people out there who had a good education and skills. And so he, like many other people, were drafted into working at Peenemünde, which you mentioned, which was the Army Research Station, where the rocket experiments were taking place.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time he came here, after the Second World War, he already had a tremendous interest and even some experience with space hardware. He went on to work in industry throughout the 1950s, 60s, 70s. By the 1980s, he really wanted to be off on his own. He set up his own consulting firm and really dedicated himself to writing, public speaking, teaching, and promoting his vision for the space program.
Now, I'm reading through the book, and you and I have chatted before about this. One of the things that impressed me was the way he came over as part of the group, basically, but kind of found his own path that led him to do something like the Centaur upper stage and the use of liquid hydrogen, and that seemed to set him apart from kind of the other guys. And I was curious if you could talk a little bit about that.
It was an interesting time. Certainly, Wernher von Braun and many others in the team were most concerned about getting something done. If you can put some hardware together and launch it and it works, you can demonstrate that this is a technology that has a future. So really, for many people, the focus was do the basic experiments, do the simplest things, just get it to work,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then we'll get the funding to go on and do the more interesting things. Kraft-Ehrke was not concerned about the engineering. He felt that there were so many talented people, of course, not just the Germans, but many of the American up-and-coming engineers, that he felt that the hardware would be developed, and he wasn't worried about that. His concern was really the philosophy of space flight, and I think that really set him apart from many of the other people, both Germans and Americans, who were the pioneers. He, as early as 1957, actually before Sputnik, came out with what he called his laws of astronautics.
Yeah, these are great.
This is amazing. If people functioned, if Congress made up a budget, you know, on this level with this background, we would be able to do anything we wanted to in space.
And let me take just if I can do it in 30 seconds. He had three fundamental laws of astronautics. The first law: nobody and nothing under the natural laws of his universe impose any limitations on man except man himself. So we can do whatever we want. The only thing that's getting in the way of us is us. The second law: not only the Earth, but the entire solar system and as much of the universe as he can reach under the laws of nature are man's rightful field of activity. So we belong out there, and it's all ours for the taking. Third law: by expanding through the universe, man fulfills his destiny as an element of life endowed with the power of reason and the wisdom of the moral law within himself. And I'm not sure I'm smart enough at my age to even understand what that means, except for that it sounds pretty good. Like, we're supposed to be out there, and it's our right to be out there, and we need to go out there. Is that essentially the three laws?
Yes, and I think this became very dramatic, not so much in 1957 when he wrote this, but think about 10 years later.
Yeah.
Think about the late 1960s and the beginning of the limits to growth movement, right? You had the environmentalists saying, you know, man is just another creature on the earth. He dirties the planet. All he does is create waste. And, you know, Kraft-Ehrke had said 10 years before that, no, man is the only creature on the earth who has the power of reason. He can create his own environment. He creates his own future, his own technology. We're not birds who dirty our nest. Mm-hmm. We are a very unique feature of life on this earth. And when the environmental movement and the anti-technology people got going, he gave speeches and traveled and really countered that argument and said, no, the human person, the human race, we are set apart from all of the rest of the creatures on Earth. And if you remember, even, you know, when Apollo 11 was getting ready to launch, you had people writing letters to NASA saying, we should not be doing this.
Yeah.
We should not be going into space. This is God's firmament. And we are going somewhere we should not be going. Erica had dealt with that again 10 years before, saying, no, this entire universe is mankind's area of activity. So it may not have been so striking to people when he wrote it, but I think you saw the value of that as time went on.
Well, and as we've watched the environmental movement, and even supported by our own pictures from space of Earth sitting out there the way it looks, just an absolutely amazing viewpoint and approach to space. We try to use security, national security. We talk about the economic benefits, the technological benefits, but the idea, the philosophical idea that basically we belong out there and we need to go there, the whole idea of spirit of exploration, breaking the frontiers, I mean, all of that gets wrapped up in what he's talking about. And to me, that makes him a very interesting and unique individual, especially as you were saying, as the whole Vietnam thing was happening, the counterculture thing. It was like one man against a rising storm, and that was really great. Well, look, we're going to take a quick five-minute break. We're going to do our built-in hold here, get update on news, weather, and sports, and be back with more with Marcia Freeman. Stand by. This is Space Talk on WMMB. I'm Jim Banky.
With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Banky.
And welcome back to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by Space Florida, committed to expanding Florida's aerospace enterprise. Well, 321-768-1240, the number to call to be a part of today's program, star 1240 for AT&T wireless customers. SpaceTalking@AOL.com is the email address to use if you'd like to send a comment or question about what we're talking about or anything that has to be on your mind today about our space program. On the program today, author Marcia Freeman, author of a book about Kraft Erica, who was, maybe one of the lesser-known characters that made up the original German rocket team led by Wernher von Braun. We'll continue our conversation with her in just a moment. But first, I do want to take this time to get a quick update on what our state space agency is up to. Space Florida's Director of Spaceport Operations, our good friend Pat McCarthy, joins us by phone. Mr. McCarthy, how are you today?
Doing great, Jim. How are you?
Good. What's new at Space Florida this week?
Well, this week we were kicking off the big agenda for Space Day, which is coming up in March, and that's when we get a lot of local and county government reps, aerospace industry leaders, and NASA and Air Force representatives to go to Tallahassee to meet with the state legislature. And what they do is get the importance out there of the various incentives to make Florida more competitive in the aerospace marketplace.
The agenda put together, what the legislative agenda, a lot of new initiatives this year maybe?
Indeed there are. Some we've been trying to get for the past couple of years, and we look like going to have the kind of support we need this year. Some things like some space business incentives, corporate income tax credits, interesting things like net operating loss tax credit, which I could never explain, but it's great for business folks. But these are just kinds of things to help support different economic policies and investments that will help make Florida the best location for doing business.
Well, and again, I recognize, Pat, that you're more of a turbopump guy than a tax incentive guy, but I do wonder if with Senator Haradopoulos being sort of the power player that he is these days, whether this year's Space Day will look any different than past years. Is there any buzz about that in the office, or is that really not your table?
Not my table, but there is some talk about that, and we were thinking that this is going to give us some pretty good opportunities to do more economic development work and stimulate some different things coming out of the legislature this year.
And, of course, Space Florida always open to new business and new ideas. How do they get in touch with you?
Well, they get us at 321-730-5301 and talk to our business development office so they can take a look at www.spaceflorida.gov and click on the About Us link, and that'll put you in touch with the folks you need to talk to about getting your business down here into the state or improving the business you already have here in the state.
Yeah, you got all sorts of incentives and ideas and ways to help, and then, of course, the whole infrastructure to put a lot of those things in action. So, okay, Pat, well, thanks for the weekly update. We'll probably catch you next week, and be good.
Sounds great, Jim. Thanks a lot.
Talk to you soon. Okay. Pat McCarthy, Director of Spaceport Operations at Space Florida. Of course, Space Florida, our major sponsor of Space Talk, and we appreciate being able to get an update from him or whoever every week. So there you go. Marcia Freeman, author of the book Kraft Erika's Extraterrestrial Imperative, and it makes me wonder, Marcia, what do you think Dr. Erika would think about what where we're at today? What camp would he follow? Would he be a big Constellation supporter? Would he want to see private enterprise involved? I mean, you know the issues. Where do you think he would fall today?
I think he would fall in an interesting place, which is not really as a promoter of exclusively either side. He was very much in favor, and really what he saw was the development of commercial space, but not in the very narrow sense that a lot of people discuss it today. He saw, over a period of decades, the progression of technologies, particularly for the industrial development of the moon. Mm-hmm. Spent the last 10 years of his life doing very detailed, intricate work, even engineering design studies, on industrializing and settling the moon. He certainly realized that the government was going to have to lay the basis for that, just as the government helped in many different ways the laying down of the Transcontinental Railroad 150 years ago, mm-hmm. With eminent domain, with various kinds of financial support and other things, that the government would essentially provide the infrastructure, and that business and entrepreneurs, people with exciting new ideas and technologies, would be able to use that infrastructure and take off from there. So he did not see it as an either-or proposition, where everything had to be done by NASA, or NASA should shrivel up and die, right, and everything should be done by the private sector.
Well, and he, I'm impressed that he doesn't seem to be afraid of technology at all. The classic technology, fire is good. Technology is our friend, and is not going to self-destruct us. I mean, his talk about nuclear power, he wasn't afraid. It didn't seem to me like he was afraid to embrace any idea that didn't involve our progression as a species to do what we can do better.
Well, I think that goes back to what you read before. His laws of astronautics make the assumption that man is endowed with the power of reason. Yes, certainly, and he was very disturbed by the fact that technology could be used for very bad ends. But he also felt that the basic nature of mankind was based on reason and human dignity, and that what space exploration actually allowed was that to come forward. So, yes, I think he was very optimistic in that way.
Was he a religious man?
No, not in the classical sense of, someone who goes to church every day, but I think he definitely had this sense of a higher order, certainly, in nature.
I think he's fairly called a humanist more than anything.
Yes, I would agree.
Okay, interesting. Because he had a lot of hope, and it seemed to me he had faith. It seemed to me he had vision, and that man ultimately is good. And I know a lot of that comes from people's faith sometimes, but certainly it's just part of our soul. Now, Let's spend a couple more minutes. We've got a couple more minutes left. I want to talk about the book itself. First of all, you put together a very interesting book, and I'd like you to just talk about some of the material that's in it, certainly some of the reprinted stuff that's in there.
One of the reasons that I did the book was because almost all of his material is out of print. It's just not available anywhere, either the books that he wrote or the papers that he presented at conferences. So I felt it really was very important to bring that back into the public domain, that anybody should be able to buy the book and be able to read what the man himself said and wrote. There are also a couple of things in there that have never appeared in print before. One, we translated from the German, which was a short story he wrote in the 1930s as a young man.
Yeah.
So there are new things in there as well.
I wonder what he would think of today's science fiction. I mean, you know, I've watched the how does it say it in German? Frau im Mond or Frau im Mond?
Yeah,
the woman in the moon. I've seen the movie in its original German. And it's a tough movie to get through when you're so used to today's Star Wars and Star Trek and whatnot. But back then, it must have just been absolutely mind-blowing, and I can see how and why it affected so many people. You wonder what Dr. Erica could do today with our modern communications capabilities and with the internet to get the word out, because all his stuff is relevant, you know. And that's why I'm a big proponent of your book, Marcia. Is just everything he talked about is so absolutely true today and stands the test of time.
Well, the other interesting thing about the visuals that you mentioned is that people wouldn't necessarily be aware, but many of the paintings, the artwork in the book, in his articles, he painted. He was an excellent artist, and not only did he have the vision in his mind, but he was actually able to put it on a canvas. So many of the illustrations are his own paintings.
And we're beginning to run a little bit out of time here, but tell me real quick, because I know that you worked with him in the later years of his life, and I know that's partly why you were inspired to do this. What was the man like himself? Quiet and retrospective, life of the party? I mean, what was he like?
Well, certainly not the life of the party. A wonderful sense of humor and a very hearty laughter, but a very dignified, I would really say, a very gentle man and very serious, worked probably 20 hours a day on his own writings and paintings and material, but very gentlemanly, very soft-spoken.
Sounds like a real nice guy, like a real neat guy to be around.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, look, Marcia, we're starting to run out of time. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us. Thank you so much for doing this book. And by the way, I did order your first book. I think it was like $3 on Amazon. So you were right. It was a good buy, and I'm looking forward to reading that as well. Book about all of the German rocket pioneers in the early days. To get Marcia's book, the easiest way for you to do it really is basically go to our Space Talk website. Go to wmmbam.com, keywords Space Talk, and you'll see a link right there, the cover of the book. You can purchase the book through Amazon and support Space Talk as well. So, Marcia, thanks again. We'll just say goodbye to you and appreciate having you on the air today. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon. When we're back, we'll get you an update with a launch forecast and some other news of the day and see what else is going on. This is Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida. Again, I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back as we do begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk, sponsored by Space Florida. Space Talk also brought to you today by the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, the only place in Brevard County where you can watch the movie Tron Legacy in 3D at an IMAX theater, but only until February 10th. So get out there, get there quick. All the other great attractions await you as well, including the shuttle launch experience. It all adds up to a day of fun and a lifetime of inspiration. Get all the details about visiting the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex online at where else but kennedyspacecenter.com. Well, now let's turn our attention to the Space Talk launch forecast, brought to you each week by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, we do take a look at the calendar, and in terms of launches from the Cape, Discovery, now set for February 24th at 4:50 in the late afternoon Eastern Time. And that launch continues to look good as of this time. Discovery still in the vehicle assembly building. Repairs to the external tank wrapping up, and talk of moving the vehicle out here in the next week or so. The news about Discovery's mission this past week, of course, was that astronaut Steve Bowen will replace Timothy Capra on Discovery. Last week, after we got off the air, we went home and found out that the mission specialist Capra was injured in a bicycle accident last Saturday in near his home in Houston. After a couple of days of assessment, it was became clear that he would not be able to make the flight. Considering training, last-minute training and all that. So Stephen will take his place, and we wish them both well. It's one of those, you know, good news, bad news, tough break, good for you kind of things. I mean, wow. Endeavour remains targeted for launch, by the way, April 19th. That launch now 7:48 in the evening, daylight time. I didn't get a chance to look to see when the sunset is, but that's going to be pretty darn close. It's going to be a beautiful launch one way or the other at that time of day. Mark Kelly, the commander of that mission, obviously with his wife recovering in Houston after her gunshot wound, still unclear whether he'll be the commander or not. Frederick Sturko is temporarily assigned commander. By the way, I do want to admit to you all publicly that I think last week I might have mentioned I had Kelly commanding the Discovery mission, and that was just a twist of some cut-and-paste error on my part in some notes. So, just want to acknowledge that. Kelly, supposed to be the commander of the Endeavour mission in April, and again, a temporary commander is filling his place for now. They expect to make a decision within the next few weeks as to whether or not Mark will be able to continue to be the commander of that flight. And then in the meantime, Atlantis has an official target launch date of June 28th, although there still remains no money to pay for the flight. NASA does need to get started on plans for that, serious formal plans. They've done a lot of informal stuff already, but they're going to assume they're going to get the money and keep going until they absolutely can't for whatever reason. I think that's the smart move to make. It's the right move to make. And hopefully Atlantis will get the funding that it needs to get off the ground one more time. Again, we're looking at a June 28th launch for the last flight of a space shuttle in history. Looking ahead really quick, just to give you an idea of where everything else is at, March 4th looks like it'll be the next Atlas launch and Atlas V. Next March 11th would be a Delta IV medium. And maybe sometime in July is the next Falcon 9. So our trio of big launchers all getting set to fly. And as usual, sometimes they bunch up like that. So we'll see how that all winds up working out. So that's the launch forecast right now. And again, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Well, look, as we wrap up here, I got a little more time here. Let me do this. As much as I am a true space cadet, and as you know, a big fan of the NFL, the Vikings in particular, mostly because that gives me my strongest connection to my home in Minnesota. There are other things I love as well. I love all things Disney, Star Trek, Star Wars, science fiction in general. You may not know, I'm a big history buff. I love history, presidential politics, national history, world history. And it's always the historical parts of even the space program that I'm most interested in. Well, when you combine my interest in history and sports, then I'm just going to have to call your attention to tomorrow's big football game, Green Bay Packers and the Chicago Bears playing for the NFC Championship. And even if you're not a football fan, you need to be aware of the fact that this is a little piece of history, a little piece of American history going to happen tomorrow. This is a big deal tomorrow in terms of the NFL, and like so many others that have talked about it for the past week, I can't wait. I'm going all out on this one, which means bratwurst and sauerkraut and tab, and I'm just going to be in my element tomorrow. But I do want to recognize that after the fun is over with tomorrow, and as the week progresses, you know, and we get over the fun and the entertainment of the big games, you know, we are going to be facing some historical memories here that are going to be tough. You know, all of us on the space community here are going to be reminded of some of the darkest days of space history, you know, again, especially here on the Space Coast. On Thursday, all eyes will be on Launch Complex 34, where in 1967 we lost the Apollo 1 crew. And then the next day, on Friday, which would be January 28th, we will recall once again seeing that horrible scar in our sky that was over pad 39B that marked the loss of Challenger and her seven astronauts. And because this particular calendar year marks the 25th anniversary of the launch of Challenger, The loss of Challenger, a nice even number, as they say. There will be more ceremonies, more coverage in the news media, more opportunities for all of us to feel that awful sense of emptiness that those of us who lived through that day and saw the disaster, not replayed over and over again on TV, but with our own eyes, that loss we felt on that day and in the weeks that followed. Of course, the anniversary of Columbia will follow the next week. But as we should every year, I hope that we can remember these fallen heroes by acknowledging the grief and the pain that so many of us still feel, and then honor their memory by pressing forward with what I hope is a vigorous space program that benefits everyone in so many different ways. But certainly, most importantly, I think, would be a testimony to the human spirit of our ingenuity, of innovation, and certainly the spirit of exploration that's in a part of all of us. So we'll deal with that anniversary week, and go through the motions. But let's use it to really inspire us and move forward, make this an absolutely great year, and solidify our future and move forward. Well, anyway, that wraps it up for today. Again, thanks to Pat McCarthy from Space Florida. Thanks to Marcia Freeman for joining me on the program today. Thanks also to Rick Connors at Apogee Books for facilitating Marcia's appearance. Remember to go to WMMBAM.com/Space Talk for a link to purchase the book. Space Talk, sponsored by Space Florida, and is a production of Mylas Solutions. Aaron Michaels is my personal chief engineer. Up next on WMMB is the Home Mortgage Law Show. I'm Jim Bankey, and we'll talk to you again real soon.